It's 21.
Hi again, everyone. Welcome back to Hits 21, where me, Rob,
me, Andy,
and me, Lizzie,
all look back at every single UK number one of the 21st century, from January 2000 right through to the present day. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us over on Twitter. We are at Hits21UK, that is at Hits21UK, and you can email us too. Send it on over to Hits21podcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining us again. We are currently looking back at the year 2008. That's where you find us. And this week, we'll be covering the period between the 20th of April and the 7th of June. We are flying through the first half of this year. Last week, in the first episode of 2008, the polls went back to normal. And the winner, only by two votes, was American Boy. Estelle and Kanye West taking it from Duffy. One vote for Bass Hunter. One vote for Bass Hunter, whoever that was.
Maybe it was Bass Hunter.
Yeah, maybe.
Hi, if you're listening, Bass Hunter. It is time now to press on with this week's episode. And as always, it's time for some news headlines from around the time that the songs we're covering in this episode were at number one in the UK. In football, Manchester United win back-to-back Premier League titles with Ryan Giggs becoming the first player in English football to win 10 top division championships. Portsmouth win the FA Cup after beating Cardiff 1-0 in the final at the new Wembley Stadium. And Manchester United also win the Champions League after beating fellow English finalist Chelsea on penalties in the final in Moscow. Probably best remembered for John Terry slipping in the rain.
Conservative candidate and obscure figure that no one's heard of, Boris Johnson, is elected as the new mayor of London, defeating Labour candidate Ken Livingstone. Don't worry, I'm sure we'll never hear about Boris Johnson ever again. Meanwhile, local elections also take place in the UK, with Labour falling to third place in the popular vote behind the Liberal Democrats. And footballer Joey Barton is sentenced to 6 months in prison after being convicted of assault.
And people in Manchester are banned from watching sports events in public after clashes between police and fans of Rangers Football Club. Rangers fans had come down from Glasgow to attend the UEFA Cup final between Rangers and Zenit St. Petersburg, held at the City of Manchester Stadium, now the Etihad. Fights broke out when a big screen in Piccadilly Gardens suddenly disconnected.
The films to hit the top of the UK box office during this period were as follows. Forgetting Sarah Marshall for 1 week, Iron Man for 3 weeks, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull for 1 week, and Sex in the City for 2 weeks.
Terry Wogan steps down from the BBC's coverage of the Eurovision Song Contest after the United Kingdom finishes dead last in 2008, not for the first time in recent years. Andy Abraham, the former X Factor contestant, scored just 14 points, while Russia's Dima Bilan won the competition with his song Believe. Wogan claimed that Russia were political winners after receiving numerous 12-point awards from former Soviet Union states. And, I mean, there's arguments to be had about what was happening at the top of the table in those years, but the being is one that Terry Wogan had about the UK is quite simply because all of the UK's entries in that era were shockingly bad. We deserved to come last, in my opinion. There was never any politics against the UK, so I'm just going to put that on the record. Yeah.
It really was an era of arrogance in terms of our Eurovision entries. It was just like, well, we're the UK. We can enter whatever, and people will vote for it because remember the Beatles? They were from here once. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way. And in more TV news, breakdancer George Sampson wins the second series of Britain's Got Talent, winning £100,000 and a chance to show off his skills at the Royal Variety Performance. And Cheryl Cole is revealed as the new judge on The X Factor, following the sudden departure of Sharon Osbourne.
Andy, the UK album charts, how are they?
Well, it's another pretty long period that we're covering here. As you say, we're getting through the year at lightning pace. So I've once again got quite a few to talk to you about and quite a few new names that we haven't discussed before. And one real blast from the past that I'm it's bizarre that they've got a number one this week, so bear with me on that. First of all, we've got everyone's favourite indie outfit, The Kooks, at number one with their album Conk, which went single platinum and is number one for 1 week. Who doesn't love The Kooks, eh? Much missed. Anyway, the next week they are toppled by another indie group. It's The Last Shadow Puppets at number one with The Age of the Understatement, went single platinum and was number one for 1 week. Then we've got Madonna back at the top with her latest album, Hard Candy. Again, 1 week at the top and went platinum. And then, this is 2008, folks, not 2002, but number one the week after that is Scooter with Jumping All Over the World.
Oh,
went number one for 1 week and went platinum. Scooter in 2008? This must have passed me by. I have no memory of this.
Do you not remember the, you got the figure, I got the face, I'm jumping all over the world. Do you not remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
I maybe very vaguely, but I don't know. It just feels like he's from a bygone era. But good for you, Scooter. Good for plugging away. Yeah. Then we've got Neil Diamond with his latest Home Before Dark. Again, 1 week and went single platinum. Before the Ting Tings toppled Neil Diamond with We Started Nothing, their debut album, which went double platinum. The Ting Tings, eh? Will we ever get to discuss them? And then finally, closing out this period is Usher going back to number one with Here I Stand, which only went gold and was number one for 1 week. So every single album this week only had one stay at the top, and only one album went more than single platinum. So it's a relatively quiet period on the albums chart at the moment. We've got some real biggies to come. So this is a bit of a chill time on the albums chart right now.
Lizzie, how are things looking stateside?
Well, thankfully, only a couple of singles to mention this week, after last week was quite a busy affair. First up, we have Lollipop by Lil Wayne featuring Static Major. The song soared up the charts after the death of Static Major from surgical complications in February of this year, just 2 weeks after the single's release. It was the first US number one single for either artist, and it spent 5 weeks at number one between May and June. It was eventually certified diamond in the US with over 10 million sales, but only got as high as number 26 over here in the UK. So finally for singles this week, Rihanna returned to the top spot with her third US number one single, Take a Bow. It only got to number one for 1 week, but was eventually certified platinum in the US, and also got to number one in the UK. More on that later. So, over to albums. Let's get stuck in. We have Spirit by Leona Lewis. 1 week, also got to number one in the UK, obviously. Then we have E equals MC Squared by Mariah Carey. 2 weeks, got to number three in the UK. Next up is Hard Candy by Madonna. 1 week, also got to number one over here. Then we have Home Before Dark by Neil Diamond. 1 week, also got to number one in the UK. Next up is Narrow Stairs by Death Cab for Cutie, 1 week, number 24 in the UK.
Wow.
And finally, we have Three Doors Down by Three Doors Down, 1 week, failed to chart in the UK.
Aww.
So, much more closely aligned than we were last week. We had a period where just all of these American acts weren't really making a dent over here, but seems to be lining up a bit more now.
I have to quickly mention E equals MC Squared, which was forever immortalised for me by Philomena Kunk when she said, Einstein made an incredible discovery that E equals Mc2.
Well, thank you both very much for those reports, and we're going to crack on with the UK number ones for this week that we're going to be looking at. And the first of those is this. Show me where it's at. Are you ready to go? Okay, this is 4 Minutes by Madonna, featuring Justin Timberlake and Timbaland. Released as the lead single from her 11th studio album, titled Hard Candy, 4 Minutes is Madonna's 72nd single overall to be released in the UK and her 13th to reach number one. However, as of 2024, it is her last number one. It is also the last UK number one for Timbaland, but it isn't the last time that we'll be coming to Justin Timberlake on this podcast. 4 Minutes first entered the UK chart at number 7, reaching number 1 during its 5th week on the chart. It stayed at number 1 for 4 weeks. In its first week atop the charts, it sold 41,000 copies, beating competition from Lovin' This Club by Usher, which climbed to number 6, and The Age of the Understatement by The Last Shadow Puppets, which climbed to number 9. In week 2, it sold 50,000 copies, beating competition from Wearing My Rolex by Wiley, which got to number 4, Heartbreaker by will.i.am, which climbed to number 8, and Heartbeat by Scouty for Girls, which climbed to number 10. In week 3, it sold 40,000 copies, beating competition from Propane Nightmares by Pendulum, which climbed to number 9. And in week 4, it sold 30,000 copies, beating competition from Violet Hill by Coldplay, which got to number 8, and In My Arms by Kylie Minogue, which climbed to number 10. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, 4 Minutes fell 2 places to number 3. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 29 weeks. The song is currently officially certified platinum in the UK as of 2024. Andy, you can open us up with 4 Minutes.
Yeah, I'm just kind of imagining an alternative world there where we open up the show with Propane Nightmares. That would have been fun. Oh, well. Yes, so this is a weird one for me, this. It's hard to avoid the weight of expectation that weighs on something like this, because you've got Madonna and Justin Timberlake here, and Timbaland as well, which obviously bears mentioning. But Madonna and Justin Timberlake, you've got one of the most influential artists from the 80s and 90s, the noughties sort of as well, and Justin Timberlake, one of the very most influential artists from the noughties. This is a real combination of titans coming together here. And there are a few things in pop music that deflate me and irritate me more than when duets of two massive artists come to nothing and just produce kind of bland filler material. I don't know how it happens. I think it's maybe to do with like this idea that if you've got two big names, then that itself is the thing, and that's like what you're buying into, and the song never really gets the proper focus it deserves. But it's happened so many times. Like, I think I've talked about this before at some point on the show, where you get Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush, who kind of produced a nothing burger with that, and like Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder obviously produced Ebony and Ivory, one of the worst songs I've ever heard. And like, there's just so many examples of when you get these duets that just don't really come to much. And that's how I feel about this, that there's nothing like I dislike about it, but this is Madonna and Justin Timberlake. Like, come on, the amount of creativity, the amount of style, the amount of experience in that room. And they've got this song, 4 Minutes, which is just kind of a little bit of a jam that is sort of not really about anything, and it doesn't challenge either of them vocally. It doesn't really challenge either of them in terms of their styles. If I was to kind of tip the balance one way or the other, this feels more like a Justin Timberlake song with Madonna on it for me, rather than a Madonna song with Justin Timberlake on it. But the balance is pretty fine, really, and it feels like this is well within the safety zone for both of them. So I kind of can't help but be a bit like, oh, they could have done better than this. You know, you've got the artist who did Ray of Light and the artist who did Cry Me a River. Come on, you could have produced something more than this. But then I have to kind of unplug and just think about it as a piece of music, and it is fine. Like, there's nothing particularly wrong with it. It has quite a few different hooks on it. I like that Madonna, tick-tock kind of thing that's running all the way through. I do think the chorus is mildly catchy, but there could have been more to it than that. And I think this actual 4 Minutes idea, if they'd gone in on it a bit more, I think actually is quite a good one. I think it could work. But I have to say, would it have killed them for the song to last exactly 4 minutes.
Have you been reading my notes, Andy?
It's just, it's so disappointing because there's an edit of this which is like 3:09, I think. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to see if there's any other, because there must be one that's 4 minutes. And there's a longer version that's 4:09 as well. So it's like, oh, come on. Could you not have really gone into this and been like, we have 4 minutes to produce this song and therefore save the world? Like, make it a meta thing. That is a really good idea. Not sort of crediting myself for that, because I think it's obvious. Like, why not make the song last exactly 4 minutes?
Exactly.
It's so frustrating. So near yet so far. And I think that's this song all over, really, in that it's got all the basic ingredients of a song that could be a hit in 2008. Like, it's got that cool brass sound behind it. It's got good performances from both Madonna and Justin Timberlake. But it's just not what it could be. It's not what it could be. In the file of, you know, sort of great pop comings together for duets, you've got sort of Under Pressure in one corner and you've got The Girl Is Mine in one other corner, and this is much more towards The Girl Is Mine territory for me, unfortunately. So it's fine, but come on. You've got the potential to give me a 10 out of 10 here, and they just didn't, so it's a bit of a shame. Yeah.
Oh, I would tear this to shreds, Andy, but I'm a lover, not a fighter. I'm surprised, actually. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but I do think that your criticism of Don't Give Up will be quite controversial out there.
Oh, yeah.
To people
yeah,
who are listening.
Yeah, I think that will be quite controversial.
But...
Yeah.
This used to annoy me that it wasn't 4 minutes long, but the first time that annoyed me was Mark Owen with 4 minute warning. That wasn't 4 minutes long as well. That always used to pick at me when I was a kid. But
that kept coming up. When I searched for this on Spotify, 4 minute warning kept coming up. I didn't bother listening to it, but I'll have to give that a go.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. This 4 minutes is quite a seminal and defining moment for me, because this is the first time in my pop listening life, being sort of 13 years old, that I remember looking forward to something and anticipating it, and then being really underwhelmed with the results. It was like the first time that a pop song I'd been waiting for had disappointed me. And I think it's a sign that, like, I'm kind of growing up, and, you know, there are lines now between, like, what I like and what I don't, because I was into Timbaland and Shock Value, as I've explained. I owned Future Sex Love Sounds. I'd been into the singles from Confessions on a Dance Floor. So I knew all of her big hits as well, Madonna as well, from years ago. And then Radio 1... they played this for the first time. I think it was one of them, like, Zane Lowe worldwide premiere kind of things at 7 p.m. or whatever. And I just remember sitting there in the car, actually, in my mum's car, and thinking, like, is that it? Like, you have Timbaland producing for Madonna and Justin Timberlake, and this is it. I don't know, like, in the years since, I've gained a stronger appreciation for this just because I think it has, you know, Timbaland's kind of typical high fidelity production where every spot of the mix is used, but you're still provided with enough breathing room to pass out and decipher the individual, you know, little bits and pieces. You know, Madonna and Justin Timberlake's chemistry is all right. You know, it's fine. I think the introduction's good, you know, because those, like, poppy, you know, horns, they build up enough anticipation. You've got Madonna trying to forge this catchphrase for herself after Hung Up with the tick-tock, tick-tock thing. There's enough here to be going on with, and I think it contains just about enough star power to justify its stay at number one. Like, you know, I can understand why this managed so long at the top, because ultimately that's what this podcast is about. It's like trying to figure out why these songs were at number one, trying to get to the heart of it, because as much as our opinions are our opinions, like, public record and data is against us, and so we have to kind of, like, you know, try and find a way to understand why this worked even when we didn't think that it did. But I think star power is the key phrase here, because there's just about enough, but there isn't really enough, is there? It's like you were saying, Andy, it's like, it's all right, but is it Madonna, Justin Timberlake, and Timbaland all right? You know, this contains two of the greatest pop thinkers of the last 40 years, and also Justin Timberlake, who hasn't really got a great pop mind, but does have a terrific ability of expertly delivering someone else's ideas. Justin Timberlake's not really an ideas man. He's like someone who you get in to make sure that your idea goes off well. And so you have these generational talents coming together, which they still all are in 2008. But they just seem kind of happy with their lot. You know, Madonna doesn't sound like she's putting her all into it. I think she's gone for sultry, but has wound up with kind of just sullen. And I don't think it's up to standard, really. I think this bills itself as like event pop. And it feels like when you step out of your house, it must have been on every billboard for 50 miles. And then it just kind of dribbles into existence. Like, it's fine, but I think, like, it's maybe a sign that for the next few years, less will be still treated with the same reverence as more, just so long as the right name is attached to it. It's just fine. But what about you, Lizzie?
Well, you said you remembered this debuting on, what was it, Zane Lowe?
Maybe. It could have been Zane Lowe, I'm not sure. I know it was Radio 1, but I don't know if it was Zane Lowe.
Well, that's interesting, because I do remember this being debuted on TV, the music video.
Mm.
But it was on GMTV.
Maybe I missed the broadcast and I just heard the song.
There was definitely a debut on GMTV. Like, they were really hyping it up. it would have been like John Stapleton and Fiona Stewart. I don't know. It was still kind of big. And I guess that's their sort of target market for pop, which is, you know, like mums, I guess. Yeah, I think you've both summed it up quite well. It really is less than the sum of its parts, this. There are some aspects here I quite like. I like the farty synth horns in the intro. I like the cartoon superhero brass riff that plays during the chorus. But I find both the vocal performances quite underwhelming, especially Justin's. It's maybe not helped by the fact that this is almost all sung in his lower register, but as a result, he sounds kind of checked out on this song. He was one of the more expressive pop singers of the 2000s, which makes it all the more disappointing that he barely even shows up on this. And the overall construction of the song, I feel, is a bit flimsy too. In the verses here, it often seems like there's huge gaps between the bars where the instrumental is just doing its thing, and you might get a wiki wiki from Timbaland if you're lucky. The post-chorus has a similar problem, and try as he might, Timberlake can't get the word Madonna to sound enticing. I really don't like that. I'm sorry, Andy.
That's fine.
So, yeah, all in all, like, it's not terrible or anything, but in terms of the combination of stars you have here, like, purely on name value, it is such a letdown. Like, this could have been so much better, and instead it's just content with being meh. And I don't think that's good enough.
No. Yeah, that is the overwhelming feeling. I feel like I'd have more to say about this if the three of them were like, yeah, it's us, we can do anything, let's shoot for anything, and then it's just you look back and go, Jesus, what were we thinking? Whereas this, it's like, yeah, I understand it, sort of, okay. I don't know, I feel like it's a bigger crime for this to be kind of flat and unremarkable.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree completely, because there's been some big swings, or, you know, just dodgy ones that have been made in the past that are at least memorable, like, you admire the effort, like David Bowie and Mick Jagger dancing in the street, which has got that infamously awful music video. It's like, at least they're having some fun, at least they're, you know, doing something that's entertaining them, if nothing else, you know. I know we've banged this drum a lot while talking about this song, but I do think there is a point here where we start looking towards the future. And, you know, we've mentioned this a few times, that collaborations just rule the world in the modern day and have done throughout the last decade, really. And I think it's this idea that, you know, the collaborations mean the songs sort of sell themselves, because if you're a fan of anyone on it, you'll stream the song. And this is kind of an early example of that, I think, where it's like Madonna, Justin Timberlake, Timbaland, this is going to sell itself. All you need to do is kind of put something out, and it's like the product is not the thing anymore. It's the brand, or the brands, or like the brand synergy that you're buying into. And it leaves a very sick taste in my mouth, to be honest. It's far worse these days, but I do think this is an early and strong example of just putting as many names as you can in a room to ensure that you get a hit, and the actual product is the least of it. This is not the worst thing in the world, but I do think, considering the talent you've got in the room, it really shines as an example of like, yeah, we just kind of wanted to make some money out of this, to be honest. Which, you know, it's an industry, it's a business, I get that, but it shouldn't be as nakedly obvious as this. And this happens a lot in modern times, so it's not good to see the start of that happening here.
Okay, moving on to our second song this week, which is this. Okay, this is That's Not My Name by The Ting Tings. Released as the lead single from the band's debut studio album titled We Started Nothing, That's Not My Name is The Ting Tings' first single overall to be released in the UK and their first to reach number one. However, as of 2024, it is their last. That's Not My Name went straight in at number one as a brand new entry, knocking Madonna off the top of the charts. It stayed at number one for 1 week. In its first and only week atop the charts, it sold 40,000 copies, beating competition from Take a Bow by Rihanna, which got to number two. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, That's Not My Name dropped one place to number two. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 41 weeks. The song is currently officially certified platinum in the UK as of 2024. So, Lizzie, how do we feel on That's Not My Name?
I wanted to like this one more than I actually did, I'm afraid. I think there's some interesting aspects in this, but I realised while listening to it this week that it takes about 2 minutes to get to the part that I actually like, and I find myself being tempted to skip through it, which I realise is not the point. So, yeah, once it gets to that bit with the rising vocals, the Are You Calling Me Darling, I do really like that. But other than that, all I get out of this is a demonically catchy chorus, the sort that worms its way into your head and refuses to leave despite your best efforts to get rid of it. So, kudos to them for that, I guess. But overall, I think the song comes off as quite half-baked, which seems to be a recurring theme on their debut album and beyond, which is a bit of a shame, really. Not a huge fan.
I'm not a huge fan either, and funnily enough, I also went into this really wanting to like it, because I'm always kind of excited to get started on a new thing, a new artist, a new kind of idea, and I really enjoyed Duffy unexpectedly last week. And there have been a few examples of that recently where I've been like, oh, I misjudged this. I'm glad I've rediscovered it. And I thought it might be the same with this. It wasn't, suffice it to say. I completely agree that it is actually bloody catchy. And I give credit for that, especially considering that the chorus doesn't really have a tune. And so for it still to be as catchy as it is and get in people's heads as much as it did, it's quite a compliment, really, because it shouldn't really get in your head that much. It's kind of a spoken word, brash, kind of tuneless chorus. But I think what really makes it work is that, like, anyone can do their own version of it. like, it's a really easily recreatable thing. Like, I could be like, you know, they call me Drew, they call me Andrew, you know. Like, it's quite easy to do that, and so you can kind of interact with it, which is clever. And you can do it, you know, with a very easy sleight of hand without even putting a proper melody into the chorus. So I give credit to them for that. That's, like, interesting. But that's about it in terms of my compliments, really. I used a word last week for Bass Hunter. I said that I found Now You're Gone obnoxious, and I would use the same word, obnoxious, here, to be honest. And I'm also going to use the word juvenile, which is kind of how this comes across, to be honest. And when I was using words like that, I thought, well, this is kind of because I'm not the target market anymore. You know, I'm in my early 30s. This is not the kind of thing that would have been marketed to me. But then I was the target market at the time. We all were, the three of us. You know, we were exactly who the Ting Tings were aiming for. And at the time, I remember thinking, this is really cringe. This is like, it's just, there's just something about it that's really kind of, you know, blowing raspberries, like, boo, people suck, you know. Like, it kind of reminds me of, ooh, Stick You, Your Mama Too, and Your Daddy. Like, it's that sort of thing. which, again, just it just comes across as juvenile, just kind of pandering and childlike, to be honest, and insincere, which comes with that, you know, just kind of a lack of sincerity, a lack of authenticity. So it doesn't really jive with me, to be honest. But it is so, like, easily recreatable, like I said. So I thought, to prove that point, why don't I just do my own version of that spoken word chorus as about how I feel about it. So here we go. I think it's naff. I think it's cringy. I think the voice is kind of whingy. Don't like this song. Don't like this song. Don't like this song. Don't like this song. Although the chorus is kind of catchy, I think the rest of it is pretty patchy. Don't like this song. Don't like this song. Don't like this song.
Song.
And that's me done.
Well, can I just shock you both? I think this is great. I can see why people find it annoying and slightly irritating. It is bratty and in your face and doesn't take many prisoners with its kind of snarky attitude, and I also think this lets down their later material because they keep trying to recapture this. And ooh, if anybody fancies putting themselves through Hang It Up from 2012, be my guest. There's a video on YouTube done by the animator David Firth, which for some reason has been published through the BBC's official channel, where David Firth skewers the music scene, as it were, the trendy music scene of 2009, where it's kind of like a parody of one of those things that you would get in January, where it's like, I predict that this kind of thing will be popular in summer because of this and that and the data shows and et cetera, et cetera. And there's a fictional band in this video that gets introduced, and they're called Kooky Plops, and the song is called This Is The Song I Made. And the song goes, this is the song I made, this is the song I made, I made a song, it goes like this, I made a... And it is so obviously the Ting Tings, and like, it is funny, and it does nail why people would find them irritating. And I mean, I would argue that if your stuff can be parodied so accurately, then you've clearly got something going for you and you have a strong sense of style and aesthetic. But I digress slightly. I just live for the way this builds. You know, you can hear at the beginning the two of them practicing in a garage, you know, when they're first writing it, just hammering away on some drums, no instruments, just, you know, cheerleader style kind of thing. But then they add little layers here and there, and then it feels like the last minute is a bit of a celebration of them actually making it into a studio, being in the big time, being able to step into a position where they can show the world their music. Like, the first minute of this, I'm like, yeah, this is okay. Basically an improved Sandy Tom kind of thing going on. But then the second chorus begins, and you get in the background the, first it's in my head, now it's in my... And I'm like, yeah, okay, you're building this up like a dance track. You know, the super hands, oh, he's done something there, sort of reaction to it. And it adds in layers and extracts them and puts them in, develops the composition in quite a mechanical way, actually, which matches quite nicely with the sort of machine-like drums at the beginning. It sounds like a, you know, machine kind of clunking away at the back room of a big hall in a factory. And then they get the other counter melody going, which you mentioned, Lizzie, the "Are You Calling Me Darling" bit. And I'm like, yeah, great pop song. You know, it gives me reasons to keep listening, to keep waiting for the payoff. And looking back at the full thing, I think it's clearly about the quiet ways that women are disrespected and ignored by people who consider themselves to be superior. You know, they don't even remember your name. They call you Bird, they call you Darling, they call you Hell, Stacy, you know, none of them are her name. And kind of like how crappy it must have been to be on the dating scene in the 2000s in a world of Loaded and Nuts magazines and such, being called Darling and Bird all the time. I prefer the full 5-minute version over the condensed single, just because I think the build-up is slower and the payoff is better and larger. But there was something a bit different at the time. You know, I liked all of their singles. This isn't their best. I think Great DJ is probably their best. But they were all right. You know, second album was awful. I've gone through some of their later material after they kind of faded away. And I mean, we've kind of been laughing in our group a little bit that, like, you can tell that they clearly got obsessed with K Tempest around sort of like 2015. It's like, we can do that. I kind of sound like them. You don't. You really don't. But yeah, so this is about, like, I think the issue that they had outside of this is that they had one mode and this was like the best version of that mode. There's basically no variety across their discography until the point where they try to add it in and it doesn't work, because I don't think that the lead singer, whose name is Katie, I just don't think she has enough range, really, but she's good for like this specific moment, bit lightning in a bottle kind of thing, because it's easy to look back and sort of forget them because they took ages over their second album and then they scrapped it all, and then they came, 4 years is a long time to wait, I think, when you're like an up and coming band trying to, you know, make a move, you know, that sort of thing. If they'd have released an album in 2009 and, you know, they had another whole load of material waiting, I think they would have done very well for themselves, but I think they kind of struggled after this, really, because they took too long to come back, and then when they came back, the world was a different place, and they didn't really have enough in the end. I just think that after this, Shut Up and Let Me Go and Great DJ, there's not a lot lying beneath the surface, but they were good for this moment in time, but they did fade quickly. They were huge for about 12 months. They really were big. They were everywhere. I think they got, did they get like nominated for some massive awards as well? They were briefly kind of popular in the States off the back of this as well. So, you know, it felt
inevitably.
Like, yeah, like not huge, obviously, but, you know, it looked like they were maybe about to break over, and then just, yeah, I think they just made a few wrong moves and it didn't quite work. There's a song they did that ended up on the FIFA 11 soundtrack, I think, which is called Hands or Two Hands, I think. Which is all about, like, I don't know, like, I only have two hands, like, how much can I really do, sort of thing, like, you
the
know.
Goalkeeper song, yeah.
But then there was an argument over, like, they just wanted that to be, like, a white label underground release thing, but it ended up on Radio 1, and they didn't want it on Radio 1, and there was a whole argument over that, but it just seems like there was a bit of a mess somewhere between, like, 2010 and 2011, which meant that when they came back in 2012, it was fast diminishing returns set in, really. But yeah, I like this I really like this for just for this kind of, you know, this specific kind of moment in time. I think, you know, that they're worth something. But does anybody else have anything to say?
I guess just that I do agree with the point about how they fit the bill for this specific moment in time, that there are other artists around at this moment which are like, kind of like I can see where they fit alongside them in the landscape. Like, there's something about them which reminds me of Kate Nash a little bit. I feel like LaRue is sort of in this world and is just around the corner. Alphabet, even, you know, it's just, I feel like there is a place for them right at this moment, so it's not hugely surprising that they had a breakout moment at this time. It's just, I'm kind of looking back on this era thinking like, oh, this was not for me. Like, this whole era just was not really for me to some extent. And I hope it improves throughout the year, because that's a kind of vibe that I'm getting right now. I don't know if anyone else is feeling that way, but I'm just kind of like not loving what pop music is giving us at this time, to be honest.
I was also trying to kind of piece together where they came from. They do have a bit of an MIA thing as well, maybe.
Yes, actually, yeah. And MIA, Slumdog Millionaire came out around this time, so Paper Planes would have been big. So that's, yeah.
Yeah. The only other thing I want to say about this is, with all due respect, she does look like a Stacey.
But that's not her name. That's not her name. That's, I'd have to mention that as well. Like, why did they do that? That little pause. That's not my name. Like, it's just a bit
syncopation.
No, I know.
It's variety, Andy. It's just, come on.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, I don't know. It's just vaguely annoying. I don't know why. Because it doesn't sound like the rest of it sounds like natural speech. Like they're kind of shouting at someone, like, "Hey, that's not my name." And then they go, "That's not my name." And it's just a bit odd. I don't know. But yeah.
All right, then. We will move on to our final song this week, which is this.
So dumb right now, standing outside my house, trying to apologize. You're so ugly when you cry. Please just cut it out. And don't tell me you're sorry, 'cause you're not. And baby, when I know. But you put on quite a show, really had me going, but now it's time to go. Curtains finally closing, that was quite a show, very entertaining, but it's over.
All right, this is Take a Bow by Rihanna. Released as the lead single from the expanded edition of her third studio album titled Good Girl Gone Bad, Take a Bow is Rihanna's 10th single overall to be released in the UK and her second to reach number one. And it's not the last time we'll be coming to Rihanna on this podcast. Take a Bow first entered the UK chart at number two, reaching number one during its second week on the chart, knocking the Ting Tings off the top spot. It stayed at number one for 2 weeks. In its first week atop the charts, it sold 41,000 copies, beating competition from Warwick Avenue by Duffy, which climbed to number seven. And in week two, it sold 36,000 copies, beating competition from Closer by Neo, which climbed to number seven as well. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, Take a Bow dropped one place to number two. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 27 weeks. The song is currently officially certified 2x platinum, so double platinum in the UK as of 2024. Andy, how are we feeling on Take a Bow?
I mean, when you say this is not the last time we'll be covering Rihanna on this podcast, I mean, that's to say the least. Like, we're getting into a time now where she's going to become a very familiar presence on the show. She's, I guess, the new Westlife in a way, which no one's ever described Rihanna as before. But but what I like about that, what I really kind of have quite a bit of admiration for, is that she hasn't taken the enormous smash of Umbrella and Shut Up and Drive and all those kind of ones of Good Girl Gone Bad. She hasn't kind of taking the note of, well, let's just do constant big bangers, you know, that this is much more similar to something like Unfaithful, that, you know, she kind of is still willing to strip everything back and do a kind of singer-song ballad. There is a period in time in the future where I think she does rely too heavily on just big bangers all the time without much substance. But she's not at that point yet, and I do think she's still taking this seriously as a singer, which I quite like. I like the song in general. I like that it commits to the bit, and the whole thing is just entirely about, oh, you really messed me up. Like, you fooled me, well done. You're a dickhead, goodbye. And I like this constant metaphor of like the stage and taking a bow and the performance you've put on. Really like the lyrics in this. The one lyric that kind of stands out is the one that like everyone remembers, which is the "you look so dumb right now," which I just think that's a weird line to open on. It says something that like, my dad quite likes this song, but he never knew what it was called, and he always said, "What's that you look so dumb right now" song? And I just think when someone does that, it's like, that line maybe sticks out for the wrong reasons.
Makes me think of Khalees. You look so dumb right now.
Well, I think the ultimate example of a first line that doesn't work is, do you ever feel like a plastic bag, from Katy Perry? Like,
oh,
it's got that kind of energy. That line. Anyway, that's for another time. But yes, I do actually really like the lyrical content of this, and I think Rihanna is quite good at ballads. Her voice can sometimes sound a little bit scratchy, a little bit kind of plaintive and one tone, but she manages to get enough emotion out of this for it to really work. So yeah, I like this. I wouldn't think it's like the best thing in the world, and there's certainly better Rihanna songs than this and better Rihanna ballads than this, but I do like it. It's one of several songs this week, and plenty more to come, that I chiefly remember because they were dramatically covered in Glee, which we're getting into that era now. And I have to reference this one in particular, because we'll put this on Twitter so people who don't know what I'm talking about can see this, but one of my favourite Twitter jokes ever was, when you see your Icelandic friend, quite a show, very entertaining, and it's Rachel Berry going, "That was quite a show. Very entertaining." And I don't know why I find it so funny. It's such a dumb joke. I look so dumb right now. But yeah, yeah, it always reminds me of that. Yeah, so this is nice. I think that it's a shame we don't get more Rihanna ballads in the future, because one of my favourites that we'll ever cover is a much more slow, chilled out one. I quite like her in this mode. I think I might prefer this to Umbrella. But I'm going to have to think about that a bit more, because that's a little bit of a spicy take. But yeah, I like this. Take a bow, Rihanna.
Yeah, it's weird to think Rihanna was only 20 years old when she did this.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
How can someone so young sing words so sad? Rihanna, take a bow. Boot the grime of this world in the crotch, dear. And don't go home tonight. Come out. Anyway. Labored joke. I'm sorry. I really like this one. Like you, Andy. This kind of strikes me as a much better attempt at a ballad than Unfaithful from a couple of years earlier.
Mm.
That one was a bit too busy in terms of its arrangement and its content, but I find this one much more direct and more effective as a result. It's a good example of how much Ne-Yo has improved as a songwriter since we last came across him in 2006 as well. I remember we were all kind of lukewarm on So Sick. We thought it was quite nice, but yeah, also kind of inconclusive and lacking in drama. This is a lot better in pretty much every respect, I think.
Agreed.
Like, I find the production and the harmonies sound a lot fuller here, and Rihanna is a more convincing storyteller. It also reminds me a little bit of another R&B ballad I really liked a few years back, which was Stick With You by Pussycat Dolls.
Mm.
They're obviously both songs that come from completely different angles of a relationship, but there's a similar kind of deference to those old Quiet Storm R&B types, you know, your Patti LaBelle's and your Smokey Robinson's and your Ashford and Simpson's even. Yeah, I think there's something really quite compelling here, and I do like that, you know, some of the lyrics, I agree with you, Andy. They are a bit silly at times and laboured, like opening with the "you've looked so dumb right now." But I think, in a way, that sort of sells it, because it feels genuine. It feels kind of real like that. In those moments, you do say stupid things because you think, yeah, that'll show them. And you kind of think back on it and you're like, why did I say that? It's just, you know, all you know is in that moment you're mad at this person and you want to be able to communicate that anger in any way you can. But sometimes things just do slip out and you think you're giving them this amazing zinger and really you're just, it's like you're venting. And yeah, you don't always say the right thing. It could just be easier to say, you know what, screw you, bye. But yeah, sometimes you want to rub it in a bit. And I do like that there's almost a sense of Rihanna kind of respects the other person for what they're doing, but also wants to, you know, give them a bit of a kicking while they're down. It's like, thank you, but no thank you. I really like this. Like you, Andy, I'm a bit disappointed we don't get much more in the way of ballad Rihanna. I think in the coming years we get more of like dance pop Rihanna, more upbeat than this. And she does flame out a bit, particularly in the early 2010s, but she's doing fine. She's got a makeup line. She's doing grand. She's only, what, 4 years older than me, and she is a multi-billionaire. So she's just fine. She's fine. But yeah, I really like this. In terms of comparison with Umbrella, I think Umbrella is the better song, but I'd be more likely to return to this one because I'm not as familiar with it. Whereas Umbrella, I've heard it that many times that I could happily never hear it again. As good as it is, it's one of those that I don't need to listen to it. I can just play it on demand from my head. Whereas this, yeah, it's a lot more fresh to me, and I'm a big fan of it.
Just before Rob goes, I just want to quickly jump in on the thing that you said about the lyrics and the "You Look So Dumb Right Now," that, like, I actually completely agree with what you said, that I really like the rawness and the honesty in the song, that, like, there's a lot of time to delve into quite a lot of feelings in the song, and, you know, she says, like, some quite universal things, like, you're only sorry you got caught and stuff like that, which it really works most of the time. And I really like that vulnerability. It's just, I don't know what it is about that line. I think it's just not very kind of artsy. It doesn't feel very kind of polished and like written like a pop song. And that's exactly the same thing that I would say about the Firework lyric, that it just doesn't feel like it's been written for an audience. It just feels a bit too raw. But I do want to say I really agree with that point, though, that, like, the fact that it's quite kind of open and honest and not particularly filtered is a real strength of the song. And I don't want to make it sound like that I disagree with that, because I actually think that's absolutely true. I just don't know what it is about that line. It just feels a bit weird. But yeah,
the counterpoint to that is, I would say, it makes it stand out. You don't forget a line like that. As much as I don't think the plastic bag thing is a good line from Firework, you don't forget it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Lizzie, I'll take your words and off we stride. You're a girl and I'm a boy, etc., etc.
Thank you.
I have comparatively little on this, unfortunately. I like it and I'm generally with it. I think it shows more than anything that Rihanna could carry on after the success of Umbrella. You know, they've wasted no time getting this, like, second version of the album out after recording a few extra songs. Proves that she's more than just Umbrella. She can carry on, you know. It's like Umbrella was like the end of the first act, if you will. And now here's the second act of Rihanna's career and that sort of thing. I think that this is good at stretching out an ellipses at the end of a relationship, and it sounds all, you know, melancholic and wistful. I've always liked how this, you know, could very easily be like a defiant survivor kind of breakup song, but I think there is genuine sadness at the center of it, where Rihanna knows that it's over, but she's feeling upset even though she's been wronged, and, like, it's her decision, but it's not an easy decision either. You know, yeah. I mean, I haven't personally ever broken up with somebody before, but, like, I've, you know, had to spend quite a lot of time around friends who have, and it gave me a lot of pause for thought about relationships that I've been in the past, where I think, oh, it must be, you know, so easy to cut somebody loose, but, like, then they go back and forth over whether it's even a good idea for, like, months and months and months and months and months. And even when they make the decision and know that it's right, it's still torturous and difficult. I just think that the instrumental sounds a little thin to me. And the thing that is funny now, because we've fully reached the era where, like, I am actually starting to critically engage with pop songs, whether I know it or not, And I get tired in this of all the wordplay and homonyms about stage performances, and like, you know, how about a round of applause, a standing ovation, put on quite a show, curtains finally closing, take a bow, this looks like a rerun, what else is on? The award for best liar goes to you, let's hear your speech. And I'm just like, I get it, please, I get it, please stop hitting me with the same rubber hammer, please stop. But I get it, you know, like, the end of a show is like the end of a relationship, but it's a bit like, every now and again, I just expect an image to appear in my mind of Rihanna kind of nudging me with her elbow and going, eh? And I'm like, yeah, I got it the first time, thanks. But apart from that, I think this is a nice, tender ballad about difficult emotions that everybody goes through. And yeah, Rihanna's not my favourite vocalist in the world, but she does well here. You know, I've never disliked this, even though it's not really my thing. Especially not in early 2008, when I'm kind of starting to... I'm no longer buying singles in the charts. I'm just listening to the radio, but buying alternative stuff. You know, like, at this point, I'm, like, diving into MySpace and becoming a little emo child. You know, like, so Rihanna's not, like, at the forefront of my thinking at this point in 2008, but I think that this is a good kind of example of what it is. Like you, Lizzie, you know, comparing it to things like Stick With You, I definitely prefer it to that, only slightly.
I really want to present a counter-argument and fly the flag for songs that really strain at metaphors all the way through. It's kind of camp most of the time, and I really like it when songs do that. Like, it's hard to write enough lyrics to fill a song out with one metaphor over and over again, or one area of metaphors, and I actually really like it. I think it usually brings out quite a lot of creativity. The other day, funnily enough, I was listening to Love in the First Degree by Bananarama, because I'm a homosexual, and it was... It's the same thing, where it's like just everything is about being in the dock, being in a courtroom, what the judge has found you guilty of, just all the way through. And I was listening to it like, God, this is like really clever. Like, there's a lot of thought had to go into these lyrics to manage to wring 4 minutes out of it. So I actually really like it when songs do that. But I guess it's not the best combination with a sincere ballad, because it is quite a camp thing to do, really, when you go in a metaphor for all that time. But I quite like it, personally, so I just had to say that.
I think the lyrics are just a little exposed, but she does it again next year, actually, with Russian Roulette, where, like, all of the lyrics are just, like, take the gun, count to three, pull the trigger, and it's just...
Oh, don't criticise that one. I love Russian Roulette. I love that, yeah.
I mean, I should say I don't dislike the idea of ringing out, you know, a metaphor across a song on principle or anything like that. There's examples I could surely think of where I do like it. It's just this one, I just remember being a kid, like, but this looks like a rerun, what else is on? Isn't that a TV thing rather than a stage show thing?
Like, yes, it is, actually.
A rerun, yeah. So, yeah, it's just funny listening back. It's not something I necessarily hate. It's just like, oh yeah, I remember this song for doing all of this. But never mind. Andy, Madonna, the Ting Tings, Rihanna. How are we feeling on those vault pie hole-wise?
Madonna and JT was bland enough that I'm not even going to really bother thinking of a pun or joke, so no, it's not going anywhere. As for the Ting Tings, oh, you know, I'm so on the edge here. I'm so on the edge that I've got an extra little verse written about how I'm putting it in the pie hole. But I'm not going to sing it. I'm not going to sing it because I'm not going to put it in the pie hole. But it's on the edge for me. I'm not a huge fan. And as for Rihanna, it's on the edge of the vault for me, but not quite, just because I don't think it's, like, amazing, and I do think it has that little, a couple of wobbles with the lyrics, and I'm not the biggest fan of her vocals in the world. So it is really nice, but it's not quite vault-worthy for me. So everything's in the middle this week, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Mm. Lizzie, how about you?
Well, 4 minutes, didn't take me 4 minutes to think of this. It's not going anywhere. It's going right down the middle. It's not a vault. It's not a pie hole. It's not an eight. It's not a two. It's in the middle. It's going nowhere. It's kind of average. I'm not too hot on it. Sod it. And take a bow. This was nearly a vault for me. I think, Rob, your chat about the lyrics there did make me kind of have to take a step back and sort of check myself a bit, but...
Oh, no, I feel free to not check yourself if you want to put it in the vault.
No, I do think there are problems with it that there aren't with other songs that I have put in the vault. So it's going to be a near miss. And it's not like Rihanna's never been in the vault. She you know, sailed in with Umbrella, so I'm sure she'll be fine.
Okay, for me, yep, 4 minutes right down the middle. That's Not My Name is sneaking in. It's just sneaking into the vault, but only slightly for me. Take a Bow is missing the vault, but not by much.
I do want to say, though, that as much as I'm not putting Take a Bow in the vault, I do hope it wins the poll, and I'm going to preemptively assume that it does and say, and the award for the best song goes to you.
But that is it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. When we come back, we'll be continuing our journey through 2008, and we'll see you then. Bye bye now.
Bye bye.
That was quite a show.